Hello, this is Christopher Long, and you're listening to The Digital Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to cultivating the excellences of dialogue in a digital age. Today, I am joined for episode 10 by Alan Gorky.
Thank you.
Matt Meyer and Ryan Wetzel. Alan's laughing at me.
Just because you're so professional
royal,
with your introductions.
See, after 10 podcasts, you can get a little
professional. It's an anniversary, too.
It is. So I'm joined by my TLT fellowship team here at the end of the summer, and we thought we'd take the opportunity to think about what we've done and talk about where we're going from here. Mm-hmm. And so as a way of beginning that, maybe we could talk about the video that we've been working on all summer and is now going to come together probably in the next 6 to 8 months. as those of you who are following the blog perhaps have seen, we've been talking about taking a passage from the Plato's Republic and trying to turn it into a kind of video that would encourage people to think about justice and the nature of justice and where they find justice. And so it's been an interesting project that we've been talking about a lot over the summer, about how to translate some of those philosophical ideas in this relatively short passage mm-hmm. into video and into images that might be compelling for people. So maybe we could talk just a little bit about that process and the frustrations and also the exciting aspects of it. I'm sure everybody has seen Alan and me in the wonderful video.
They need to watch that.
Exactly.
I don't know that we ever can replace that video with anything better. Maybe we should just quit while we're ahead.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Now, I think what we started off with was, you picked a passage. Definitely the case. And then I think the rest of us looked at it and were kind of thinking, well, this was really a description of like a visual metaphor.
Right.
So it's not like they actually played out the scene. They described the scene. Right. I guess Socrates described the scene.
Right.
And then Plato transcribed his description.
Well, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that it's just a construction of Plato's imagination.
That's fine too.
But it is a description. I mean, Socrates describing a very kind of, in some ways, humorous scene, hunting scene in a certain way of searching for justice.
Right.
Yeah.
And describing it as if it's something external at first.
Right.
Like, let's go hunt for it. Where does it exist external of us?
Right.
But then throughout the process of the hunt, we are kind of giving it away.
That's good.
Through the process of the hunt, at least this is what I'm getting out of it. Through the process of the hunt for justice is how justice is actually constructed, by a group of people seeking it and then discovering it and following it. And there's some kind of like living, adaptive mm-hmm. thing, because I don't think justice mm-hmm. for one age is the same as justice for another age.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question in terms of how we think about the nature of justice. So I wouldn't necessarily want to say that it's completely constructed. What Socrates says, it appears in our attempt to say what it is, in our attempt to search it out. So that might mean that it stands there as a kind of ideal always mm-hmm. That remains forever elusive to some degree, but that it's incumbent upon each new generation to seek it out and to make sense of what that is. So, I mean, part of the challenge is to do that with a video to encourage people to think that way.
Yeah, well, from my standpoint, is from the development standpoint.
Right.
So, we sat around a lot of these script meetings, and what we were talking about was we were trying to get what our own internal interpretation was down first. We weren't talking about what should come where and what the visual should be. Mm-hmm. We really spent a lot of time doing just what we're doing right now.
Right.
And, getting to that point and then trying to come up with visuals for it. I mean, it's the creative process in action.
Yeah.
And it's funny how we started to come to some consensus on what we thought it should be.
Right.
And then we have a meeting yesterday and we get a whole different perspective on it. And we get some, new viewpoints and we start to open our eyes to something different.
Mm-hmm.
Still trying to get to the same point
mm-hmm.
of all those conversations we had a while ago about what is justice.
Right. So, I mean, the interesting point about that, what was the difference? The difference was we had the animators and the people who were going to put the right. images into digital form and bring them onto the screen. And I think your point is really an interesting one. It's really well taken, because I think it does speak to something important about the whole process of dialogue that we've been working on all summer. Insofar as the concept that we ultimately hit upon yesterday was something we played around with early on,
mm-hmm.
and then we went down a certain road. But I, I want to give us credit for being flexible enough in the face of what they said was possible or easier or more compelling visually, to change, to be flexible, say, look, I think we can get this point across with this other way of doing it, then it which was completely different from what we originally thought.
Right, but I think, to me, kind of the irony of the whole thing is that this is about the importance of dialogue, of verbal discussion about things and ideas going bouncing back and forth until something comes up like, oh my gosh, we've been talking about it. I mean,
right.
And now we're trying to say, let's capture that and freeze it and, right. and make it and put it into something that is, you know, if you're putting it into a video, mm-hmm. it's a stamp of a bunch of ideas and that's it. That's right. It lives and it doesn't give you feedback anymore. You right. just sit and watch and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just ironic that we're talking about it. It's about dialogue and how dialogue, continuous dialogue,
right.
You know, brings about so much and we're trying to narrow it down to this little 2-minute video.
Right. Well, I mean, Socrates says, I know you want to say something, Alan, but Socrates says something similar about writing. This is the problem with writing. It just keeps saying the same thing over and over again. It doesn't really respond. I think video might add a dynamic piece. Maybe that's the...
Well, yeah, there's two elements. One is that our team came together and we did a hunt for the hunt for justice.
Right.
Right? Because we're trying to think of a way to represent the hunt for justice, but we did it by following the shadowy paths,
right?
You know, by getting the input from the other people, and we had, you know, people coming along and say, keep going, and then somebody else comes along, and, you know, we did the process of the hunt for justice by hunting for the video to hunt for justice, you
right.
know what I mean?
No, yeah.
It's such a meta thing that I'm so glad I did. But it also, for me, represents why we want students, you know, to work with the Digital Media Commons, is that what we're calling, you know?
Not officially until January.
Okay, the Digital Commons then, to take concepts from, say, economics, and, like, now a student has to make their video about some kind of microeconomic, you know, process. It's because after making that video and after hunting for that concept, they've ingrained it in their brain. They've found it on their own. They haven't just read it.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't the static thing that they just ingested and you know, regurgitated. They've found it on their own. They've discovered it on their own. And because of that, they'll remember it forever. I'm not going to forget this video. You know, I have tangible evidence.
Blaze on your mind now.
So, yeah, so I just think that was an interesting aspect for me. And I didn't realize that until yesterday when we took such a radical you know, variation, but
right.
I still, we stayed true to our ideas. It's just the representation of the ideas that changed.
And we found the video that was there all along.
yeah, that's it.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear what you say, Ryan, about the capacity for video not to just be a one-way monologue.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because what Matt, I think, was suggesting is, look, we put this in our 2 minutes. We're trying to get it under 2 minutes. And we make it, and all that process that went into making it, then it sort of stands there on its own. Now, we are going to end the video with questions and a kind of invitation for people to speak to and with the video. We, of course, can write blog posts and other things around it. But I'd be interested to hear, Ryan, how you've experienced the sort of use of video in what you do. As a form of dialogue, as a way of engaging people in dialogue.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it comes from two different directions. There's all the dialogue, like we've been discussing, that leads up to the creation of the video. So when I see a team of students or whoever work on a video, they're trying to hash it out exactly like everybody here has been doing to get to yours. But once they're done with that video, they are not only sending that on to their professor or wherever that final destination is, but they're sharing it with their peers, and they're watching their peers' video, and they're having what they do then is they watch those videos, and then they talk with each other and discuss each other's videos. So when there are multiple, when there's, I guess, a shared community project and everybody's creating something different but in a similar medium, that's what brings that dialogue right there and where they bring that out.
So, I mean, there's two things. One that Alan was talking about, which is the way in which the very creation and the process that goes into constructing the video internalizes the concepts that you're trying to talk about or trying as a teacher, trying to get students to think about and to really internalize. And then there is, we thought about this a lot, I think, with our video, not to make it so high production value that it, you know, scares everybody away from, you know, responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have succeeded about that, although we'll see. So there's also that way in which it can invite colleagues to discuss it and to respond even in video.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what is your all of you think, what do you all think about, you know, what we gain from video and what we lose? Because one of the things I've been struck by is how my whole life is, you know, about words. I've said this a couple times this summer. It's all about words and concepts and writing and arguments and all these things. And here we have video, which is really drawing on a lot of different sorts of modes of expression, emotion, images, those sorts of things.
Well, when we were talking about, you know, encapsulating something and making it kind of static, it's only static in as much as, you know, people are willing to interpret it or not. Mm-hmm. And I think by taking a more poetic version of the video, making it more abstract,
yeah,
I think it can still have a dialogue with somebody, even though it might not be what we discussed going into it or we intended. But it might trigger somebody else to think of something differently.
Right.
You know, even by the representations of the people that we have on there. Maybe somebody sees, Abraham Lincoln, and that just triggers something else. And they really didn't think of Abraham Lincoln as somebody who would be in the search for justice. But now they think of him differently. Right. Or they might not know, you know, one of the representations that we put in there. So that triggers something else.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think the video, like a painting, like I can look at paintings in an art gallery and just get a really different interpretation of that, or just look at someone's for a while, or come back to them at different points in my life and just get a different impression from them.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask Matt about, you know, you've done a number of videos for TLT, and a lot of those videos have been really instruction kinds of videos, right, where you're showing somebody how to do something or something like that.
Primarily.
But so what are the advantages of doing a video in that context, and what do we get from, you know, pushing it in the conceptual direction? I was surprised in some ways about the direction we took yesterday on the video, because we went back to words and concept away from, you know, narrative kind of storytelling.
Well, with the more traditional video where you're showing a process or just trying to one way explain something, you're trying to make it so that it's not interpretive.
Right.
It's, oh, this is how it is. I see now the video has shown me how to do something fantastic, and now that's replicable. Someone doesn't have to go in person and teach it to someone over and over again. The medium to get the message across has been created and can be delivered, you know, millions of times, you know, relatively easily. So the video we're working on is, it's a statement in so many different ways. You're trying to take, we're interpreting a passage.
Right.
And trying to apply a visual to it that will then, you know, get a response out of someone. You know, basically you're trying to get someone's opinion or a thought on this topic of justice. And it's a great topic because justice can mean so much to so many different people.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking of, you know, somebody explained this to me once. They were saying, you could have a document and call it How to Live Your Life. And you could put whatever you want in there. And one of them can be an instructional how to live your life. Right. So you wake up, you go to the bathroom, you take a shower, you brush your teeth, and it basically is an instruction set for how to live your life.
Right.
But then there's the other approach where it's entirely interpretive poetry, and it's like, you know, telling you how to seek the good things in life. But I think each of those gets to very different levels of learning. You know, there's kind of hierarchy, and at the very lowest level you have, I need to know what the vocabulary terms are, or I need to know what the instruction sets are, I need to know what the steps are, and at the very highest level, it's more like analysis, synthesis, that sort of thing.
Well, I'm more excited about now with the technologies that are coming out, and you're seeing even with the feedback you get now on the blogs that... can't remember the name of it right now.
The Socratic Politics blog?
Well, the instead of just the commenting, the...
Oh, intense debate.
Intense debate.
Right.
Okay. Because video, like I was saying earlier, it's traditionally been a one-way thing. Let's script it, let's put a lot of production effort into it, and now here's the message.
Right.
End of deal. Well, now people, you know, these tools allow you to go video back and forth, so it's not just a one-and-done deal.
Yeah.
It's a, here's a video of someone, here's my thoughts. Here's a video of someone else, their thoughts. And it's this way of people, you know, communicating now more than it was before. And then a one-way communication is two-way, three-way, four-way. Right.
Well, I'm really going to be interested to see, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys, if we could anticipate some reactions, because I'm going to use this blog as for my undergraduate, my philosophy 200 ancient Greek philosophy class, and also going to try to bring my graduate students into the blog and have them commenting and posting as well. But I'm really interested to see what happens when we give them the possibility of the intense debate way of commenting, because you can vote up and down, vote comments up and down, you can add video comment, you can you know, subscribe to different kinds of comments, and you can just normally comment as we've had in the past. So I'm wondering if students are going to be, you know, using video more than writing, or, and you know, what that'll mean. You know, I don't know what you guys, if have we done this on a broad scale with intense debate kind of capabilities?
Not here, but you know, I think it depends on what, you know, website you go to and right. That sort of thing. I use Intense Debate on my website. My friend uses Intense Debate on his website. Generally, you still get the same kind of text-based comments.
Yeah.
Unless it's absolutely necessary to demonstrate something with a video.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, especially in academic circles, most people can write. I mean, they're used to email and that sort of thing, and writing a quick comment, wow, great video.
Right.
Or this really made me think of X, and we talked about it on Tuesday. Does that really need to be somebody's video? Right. Unless you're specifically asking for video responses about personal opinions and that sort of
right.
thing. So it might all, you know, almost be a nice thing, say your second week, to say, okay, everybody should comment on
everybody
something,
has
but
to do a video comment.
You're leaving a video comment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in thinking about what is that, because I left a couple of video comments, and I realized that what I do is I just sort of think about what I want to say, and then I go ahead and say it. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a little bit more fluidity than I would have if I were typing it, because mm-hmm. I, you know, go back and edit and all that stuff. You can't do that, you know, you have to re-record 100 times.
Yeah.
So there it might be interesting, but I am interested in thinking about what is the impact of having that video capability when what the video basically is somebody standing in front of their webcam talking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you could, you know, post a link to a YouTube video or something.
Or it depends on what you do, because in your blog you can say, you know, again, I'm going to go back to running because this is my area, but if somebody says, does anybody out there have a pair of Nike Free shoes?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, do you like them? You can leave, I would leave a video comment on that and say, okay, well, here are my shoes.
Right.
And here's how flexible they are. And I'd bend them.
Right.
And here's what the insole looks like, because I'm trying to show what the thing is. I'm responding to a question.
Yeah.
Not just leaving.
How does that translate into a philosophy class is what I'm thinking.
I don't know.
I mean, there must be ways. I mean, not necessarily demonstrating things, but I mean, we talked already about the value-added dimension of seeing facial expression.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe that's something. I mean, there's a lot of compelling conversation on YouTube that people have because they're looking at each other in a certain way, you know?
Before I forget, what we should do with this video is put Creative Commons marks on the end of it.
Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm. that will also encourage people to remix it if they want.
Right.
Which I think would be a
definitely.
Good idea.
Yeah, oh, definitely. We'll definitely do
that's
that.
Part of the dialogue, though, I think, is that they're taking that, not just what you say and responding to it, but taking that media artifact and being able to remix it.
Right, right. I mean, this gets maybe to the larger question I'd also like us to talk a little bit about, which is sort of where the future of this stuff is going. You mentioned Creative Commons. A number of people have been at the Open Education, you know, conference last week, and the question of openness, and which we started this digital dialogue talking about. And I wonder, you know, where you guys see us going in the near term with regard to some of these technologies as they relate to education.
You mean us as in broader, not just us in this team,
right.
Us, Penn State.
Yeah, us at Penn State, but, you know, also us on this team in terms of not necessarily with regard to my project, but with regard to what we're doing here at Penn State with regard to the use of technology for education.
Yeah, I mean, I just say about the Creative Commons thing, a lot of the stuff that we've been releasing lately have had Creative Commons marks all over them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll create a white paper, we'll publish that online. You don't need to have a user ID or password or anything to access it. But I used to get requests on this guide that I wrote called The Faculty Guide for Teaching Through Video Conferencing. And it was all
mm-hmm.
pedagogical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, okay, well, if you have students who are remotely at your local location and students who are remote, what you want to do is get a list of those remote students' names so you can call on them by name.
Right.
And you can say, okay, well, are there any questions from whatever the remote location? It's just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'd get requests that are saying, can I use this? Can I edit this? And with a Creative Commons license, I don't even have to give my permission. It's right. obvious. I want you to remix this. I want you to share this.
Right.
And I think that just kind of lubricates the process. Like, right. somebody doesn't say, oh, maybe I shouldn't ask, or who do I contact? They can just take it, use it, and go.
Right.
You know, there's no, it lowers the barrier
right.
there.
But I mean, what does that mean for on an institutional level in terms of, you know, the content? I'm definitely in favor of putting the content that I have mm-hmm. on the blog as Creative Commons, and I probably need to make sure I select the right things for my Creative Commons license for that blog. I don't know if I've done that yet.
Well, here's a question back to you then, Chris. Your podcast is available in the open, right?
Right.
Not just to your graduate students, not that right. just your undergraduates.
Right.
Have you gotten any publicity from that, or anybody post that on a web page that I saw?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the great things, we can talk about this, I know, I really appreciate, Alan, your suggestion at the beginning to do podcasting, because it really answered a couple of my concerns. One was it gave me a way of expressing ideas in a more fluid and a less rigid way than it would have if I were just, let's say, making blog posts about what I was working on and so forth. The other thing it did, and I think we sort of, after we started it, I think it came upon the strategy, which was to bring colleagues in mm-hmm. from other universities. And then once you do that, it's turned out great, because then they post those things on their website, and their university, the structure of their university kicks in and sort of takes over some publicity for you in some ways.
Yeah.
And now I really feel like the digital dialogue is something. It's mm-hmm. it's got its a sort
it's
of
an
life.
Actual dialogue, not just
exactly.
Chris talking into his microphone.
Right. And the other great thing about that is I'm trying, you know, probably failing in some degrees and succeeding in others, to perform what I'm talking about in terms of dialogue, being open, being flexible, being, you know, thinking reflectively about what we're doing when we're talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and not charging people for your philosophy, right?
Well, that's related to the open stuff. I mean, I think, yeah, I want to affirm that, and I want to, you know, cultivate that attitude where here's some stuff, here's some ideas, everybody's welcome to listen to it. It's available through iTunes U, it's available through mm-hmm. you know, posted on Boston College website when they highlight it, and you know, it should be accessible to everyone. I've had some colleagues say, well, how long is this going to be up there, because I want to use it for a class, but I'm not teaching that class until the spring. And to me, it's like, yeah, go for it, that's great, that's
yep.
terrific. You know,
that's so fantastic, because so many podcasts or blog posts can just keep going out into the void and never really be noticed, but that people have really picked up on this. It's just really fantastic.
It's really been fulfilling in a way that I didn't expect, because, and maybe it's the intimacy of podcasting, or maybe it's the way that I've sought out explicitly certain people who I know will be good to talk to, and they've been willing to participate. But it's really... it's got now a life of its own, and I'm really excited about it.
I'm not going to say this just to make you feel good about yourself, Chris, but I have a feeling that you could talk to just about anybody and have a good conversation about philosophy or openness or dialogue or something. Because I'm thinking about our conversation yesterday with Zach.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, well, you know, he just has these really great creative ideas for making these abstract concepts, and that conversation itself could have been
right.
you know, a digital dialogue podcast of sorts, because
right.
it's the creative process in motion.
But you know what's interesting, if we want to, I want to reflect a little bit about what happened in that meeting, because there was something going on internally in me at that time when he was sort of, he listened for a while and we were talking about, and we had invested in stuff in this idea that we had, and he was very good about sort of not saying, well, this is just garbage and we, you know, we need to start over. But basically that's what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
He said it without saying it that way. And I found myself having to say, okay, think about your reaction to this, and is what he's suggesting in the spirit of what we want to do?
Yeah.
And I had to sort of overcome a certain kind of rigid being wedded to the idea that we had, and I had to allow myself to say, wait a minute, this is actually getting what we want, but it's doing it in a way that was different than we expected.
Yeah, did you guys have the same feeling at all?
What I thought was interesting was the fact that he got the short version of what we spent a month doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We sat around and talked about what it means, right, and what about the bushes and the thicket. Oh, the thicket shouldn't be this. And so he had about 5 minutes to listen to us talk, right, and then we spent next half hour was him talking about something, and then Chris, you would say, well, what I want to get the concept of this.
Right.
And then he took it and ran with it, and then right, there was that, right, you know, there was that collaboration was going on, yeah, on the fly very quickly.
Right.
So,
but I think what's interesting from my perspective, and something that I always have to work on, and I think speaks to the question of cultivating a certain excellence in dialogue, which is a willingness to hear criticism in a way that's not like it's cutting out your very heart, you know? I mean, to be able to hear somebody say, well, you know, this is not really working this way, and also to respect the fact that people know more about what works on video than I do, and to be able to say, you know, I can hear that, and maybe we disagree about something, but I think that's something that is... we spent some time earlier on in the digital dialogue talking about identity and there is a sense of being a certain kind of grounding that you have to have that knows that when you get criticized, you can deal with it and it's not going to cut you to the quick and destroy everything.
Yeah, and I have, well, you know, and Alan too, years and years of experience of as an instructional designer, and you're trying to come up with creative things to get certain concepts across, you know, and...
Right.
You know, in that development process, a designer says, I want to have an animation that does blah, 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 blah. And then when you have your meeting with creative, their interpretation is often very different. They'll listen for, just how it went the other day,
right,
they'll listen for a while, and they'll say, what about this?
Right.
And sometimes you'll take what they're saying, you'll take all of it, go, that's great. And other times you'll take about half of it. And there's a part in there where you go, I know why they're saying this now. I'm getting it. I'm listening. But this person also doesn't have the other half of the background. I didn't
right,
put everything in the background as to why I'm doing something.
Right.
And that's the dialogue you have to have, yeah, in the creative process to keep narrowing things down.
Right.
So you learn that on the fly, like I said, in an hour's time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, and it does have to be dynamic, and it has to be mutual. I mean, there has to be a certain, you know, core of respect that says, like, I understand. I have a commitment to what you're doing in terms of the overall idea, but... You know, I also have this area of expertise that is telling me, you know, this isn't really going to work this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but this is one of the excellences.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you were saying at the very beginning that I've seen student teams work really well together. And they're typically the ones who are like, you know what, I'm really good at APA style and doing the research and stuff like that, but I really don't know the subject area because it was your question.
Right.
So why don't you find some of the resources? Why don't you help with the editing? And you know, you're really good with, you know, doing the video part. So why don't we just build on the strengths of everybody,
right,
instead of trying to fight everybody tooth and nail?
Right.
But again, I think, you know, Zach is so good at what he does, and I think he was just unwilling as an artist to tolerate what we were coming
that
was
up fair
with.
Enough. You know, I think, yeah.
I mean, he just said it's going to be a lot more compelling if we do it in a more abstract way,
yeah,
and if we do it this way.
And I think he was also saying
it was
this is
truth,
a tremendous amount of effort to do what we wanted to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what also shown through. And,
yeah,
you know, you have that conversation,
well,
all the time. Because you don't know until you put it in front of them.
Exactly.
In my head, it all seems very easy.
It's like making a blueprint for a house. You go, this would be a cool idea to have a room shaped
right,
like this, and, you know,
right,
and a roof
and
with this
he
angle.
He did a really good job of selling it to everybody,
yeah,
too. So, and
yeah,
for a guy who never speaks...
Well, he did,
he
but
yeah,
what was compelling for me was that he clearly was open to hearing the overall concept, even though what was strange for me was we were sort of moving back to an area I'm more familiar with, the conceptual. We're using the word, the justice itself, so now we're into the written. We're into
mm-hmm,
a you know, a vernacular that I'm you know, more at home with in a certain way. But it seems we'll see what it turns out to be. But I think
yeah,
it's,
so. One final thought before I
yeah,
head out of here. I just, one thing I've noticed about this is I'm reading the comments that come back,
mm,
you know, on the blog for
mm-hmm,
you. How in looks like in academia, like this is a model where typically the cycle time between communications out into your network out there take traditionally a long time, right?
Right.
You're researching, you're writing. By the time you write it, get it out there, get a transcript to someone to read. You know, long cycle times.
Right.
You know, years possibly. And you're taking something going, I have many different ways to communicate. I'm taking small chunks and bites and putting them out there in short amounts of time.
Right.
And getting this going. And I think that reverberates throughout all higher education. I mean, I know it's definitely happening in business because everything's, you know, happening so fast that you can't take a long time to create a message. You got to get it out there and start the conversation.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been really nice to have people being able to respond so quickly and to what we've been doing. And I mean, I think this has its place. It's not going to replace, you know, the long process of journal article writing and presentation writing and book writing, but it does have a liveliness that I think is really pretty powerful. And also, I find myself at the end of recording these things really excited about, you know, going doing it again, talking to more people, working on my project. So. That's really an important aspect of it.
So it'll be interesting to see if it makes your publishing more powerful. Yeah, we'll see, because you're getting those conversations in there.
Thanks, well, Matt. Thanks, Matt.
Okay, so we were. I think we were, the last point we were going to talk about was what we're already talking about now, I guess, which is the Digital Dialogue podcast and where it's going to go from here and what we're now. Doing with it. So my plan for the podcast is to continue with it as long as I can. I found that it really does help me read some of the things I want to read, because I invite people who I'm interested in talking to on, and I read around their work, and we talk about some of that material, which is important for my own research. But I'm also going to try to integrate it into my teaching this fall. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who are listening to the Digital Dialogue, we're going to start having probably also episodes in which we have some of my graduate students. I hope if I can convince them to come on and talk about some of the presentations that they will be making on the nature of Socratic politics. And so I'm hoping to get students involved in it on that level as well.
Well, I've, even before talking to you about doing this as a podcast, one of my ideas is that this is such an easy way for graduate students in particular, who are going through the literature anyway, to just sit down with each other and say, okay, well, it's almost like a book club. You know, let's all read this article because it just came out. It's really important for our field. We read through it. Okay, what do we discuss? You know, how is it going to impact us? Does that sound reasonable? Right. That sort of thing, and have a real discussion, and then kind of build their, not just their recorded voice, but their professional voice, you know, and their ability to kind of impact others in their field and to communicate with others in their field.
Yeah.
So I think this kind of model that you're doing is very replicable in practically any discipline I can think of.
Yeah, and it's as Ryan was helping me with, I mean, it really doesn't take a whole lot of you know, technical know-how, the skills that you need in terms of, you know, microphone and recording devices with the different kinds of computers people have now. They're, you know, you might not get the great, excellent, super terrific sound quality out of everything, but you've got it good enough. You know, it's like with the grassroots video we talked about, they're just good enough. That's Ryan's favorite phrase. and so I think that's important, because it's not intimidating. It can be easily produced and done, and it does open up possible ways of communicating.
Yeah. And speaking of intimidating, I think one of the best things to do is to have somebody listen to some podcasts so they understand, okay, well, these aren't professional radio people. It's not the Howard Stern Show, thank goodness. You know, it's just people around a microphone like they would be around a campfire, just talking about the stars and the nature of the universe.
Yeah.
And then maybe be a member of one of them. Like, if you interview somebody at another institution, maybe they'll start their own podcast from there, because, you know, you realize that it really isn't rocket science or anything. So.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you both, and also Matt, who's no longer here with us in the room. It sounded a little ominous.
Yeah.
I really appreciated working with you three this summer. I've learned a lot, and I really enjoyed the give and take we've had this summer.
Great.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thanks, Chris.